Hello, friends. Thank you so much for joining us. It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
For yet another episode of What Page Are You On? Today, we are not alone. We are joined by the spooky presence of It You.
It's me, Alison Rumford. I'm haunting this.
Yeah, you are. Thank you so much for coming onto our little pod. You are the you are the esteemed author of Tell Me I'm Worthless,
and we are so jazzed to have actually managed to get this to work, because we were planning on having Alison on like as soon as we knew that you had a horror novel coming out in the autumn. We were like, definitely brilliant. But it's hard, man. It's like hard to get people all at the same place at the same time, but we've done it.
We have succeeded. Alison, would you please begin by telling us about your book? Give us a brief précis of the plot of Tell Me I'm Worthless, because I'm really not good at giving synopses. So please do the honours.
I'm not good at
I'm going to let you do it. You have to learn. You have to get good at this. You need to be able to, like, your elevator pitch.
Elevator pitch is different. I don't... Tell Me I'm Worthless is a story about a house in a city that's quite like Brighton, and two girls who, when they were in the last year of university, they, along with a third friend, they broke into this house, which had been it stood empty, sort of on the skirts of the town. They broke in, and something happened there. And Tell Me I'm Worthless is basically the story of 3 years after they went into the house, what their respective lives are like, and what is bringing them back to the house.
Yeah, so it's like three girls go in, two girls come out, and then it's the resulting kind of haunting, literal and emotional of like the following three, or 3 years after the fact.
And a little bit of backstory of the house, other shit going on. It's all kind of interspersed throughout the book. And the book bangs, does it not, Alice Slater?
The book bangs. We've already told you, Alison, that we love it. But for our readers at home, we both really love this book. It is... I was about to say the quintessential haunted house novel, but it's actually not, because it is so fresh and feels so kind of modern and original. Like, it's just, it's full of surprises. And I feel like when you're working in such a specifically tight part, like, genre, to come at it with such fresh energy is just really exciting. So, fucking good job. I love it.
Agree.
I'm glad you think so. I mean, it's interesting that you seem to think it's so fresh, because obviously it's very referential in terms of... I mean, I don't think you have to have read the Haunted House canon to sort of understand it, but it is very... If you have read The Haunting of Hill House and Rebecca and The Turn of the Screw and Hell House and all of these books, I think there is... If you have read those books, then there is a lot to engage with on that front. But generally the feedback I've had is that they feel like it's really fresh. And I'm glad that it can be sort of very referential and still remain fresh.
I think that's like one of the kind of strengths of the novel, is that it very much feels like the work of someone who has read the canon. But that's not to say that it's therefore, you know, sinking in a quagmire of cliche. Like, it feels like you feel like you're in very educated hands, you know? Like, I think that that's the difference. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know. I'm thinking.
It makes sense. I'm surprised at being called educated hands. I don't know.
I mean, you know, it makes me think of, like, the movie Scream, one of my favourite horror movies, right? And your book is nothing like Scream, but in terms of Scream being very, like, steeped in references, like, it's full of intertextuality, it's very, like, a love letter to the slasher. But it also felt so fresh and original because it had, you know, there was this big distance between the movies that it was kind of inspired by and riffing on and what it was actually saying. And I feel like there's a similar energy going on, you know, like that you obviously were very inspired by haunted house novels of yore. But yeah, it feels like you're bringing something really new to the table.
Yeah, the word I feel like I keep using when I'm thinking or talking about it is it's outrageously audacious, is it not?
Yes.
It's very daring in lots of ways, some that we will not discuss for, you know, reasons. Legal reasons, and which, if you read the book, you will maybe understand what those legal reasons are. But yeah, just in general, it's so it's really not like anything else I've read. Like, obviously, it is a haunted house novel, but it just doesn't. It's got so many kind of angles and elements that are so unlike that. So yeah, that's my take. Here's my review,
and then. Yeah, I'm really, so I'm keen to talk about, so we've already kind of touched upon what some of your, like, literary inspirations were in terms of haunted house novels for the book, but where did the actual idea come from?
You know, I think authors are meant to have a sort of interesting answer to that question, be it true or not true. A big part of it is that there's a quote from Felix Guattari that serves as one of the epigraphs for the novel, and it talks about fascism as a desire, but also fascism as this thing that's sort of haunting people, and it's sort of split and like fractured glass or something. And I found it to be a really interesting quote, and I don't know where I saw it originally. I read more and I sort of formulated the idea of using haunted houses as a way to explore fascism. I'm not the first writer, I think, I'm definitely not the first writer to draw a sort of conclusion between those two things. I think if you've read White is for Witching by Helen Oyeyemi, that is a book about a racist haunted house. I think that's a wonderful book. And it was very much in my mind when I was writing it that I wasn't trying to write something that was just rehashing that book's ideas. It was, I thought I had a unique perspective on right-wing politics in the UK, and I also had lots of ideas about the differences between haunted houses and ghost stories.
Obviously, this is your debut, so this is your first experience of working with any publisher. But yeah, are you enjoying the experience of being published by, you know, a tiny but very cool indie?
I mean, the only other thing that I have had published was, apart from, like, some pieces and poems and stuff, was a pamphlet of poem that came out in 2019. But that's, like, a completely different mode of publishing. I'm really enjoying it. I mean, Cypher are great and lovely people, and I'm very, very grateful that they picked up the book and, I think, immediately saw what I was trying to do and were there to sort of me in terms of, like, putting me in touch with the right people and making sure the novel was sort of would be true to what I was trying to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I don't know if that makes sense, but they're lovely. It's been really lovely sort of working with them over the previous year, as they've had pretty big successes with 100 Boyfriends. And also, it was really funny when I got to meet them in person for the first time. It was quite surreal. I don't know how it was for them, but it was surreal for me sort of seeing these two people who for a time were just sort of like digital, like names on emails and faces on screens. I'm like, oh, you are real. You are. There are real people who want to publish my novel. It's not just sort of some elaborate.
It is very strange being edited by people that you haven't met yet. You know, like, traditionally the relationship is a very close one. So it's very strange to experience. I'm experiencing the same thing and I haven't met my editor yet. It's very odd. Like, it's like having a pen pal who's, like, weirdly invested in your work. So I'd love to know, you just mentioned the kind of distinction between a ghost story versus a haunted house. I'd love to, like, talk about that a bit more. Do you think of this distinctly as a haunted house story rather than a ghost story? And what do you think, how would you explain that to listeners that maybe are not so clear on the distinction?
So haunted house stories as a mode don't necessarily have ghosts in them. It's sort of hard to quantify whether Tell Me I'm Worthless has a ghost in it, but I mean, there are obviously different types of haunted house stories. I think it's a haunted house stories are more invested in the architecture of a space and the existence of a space, whereas ghost stories are... I don't think I love M.R. James. I don't think he generally writes haunted houses. He writes ghost stories. That's how I would think of it. I would think of The Signalman by Charles Dickens. That's a ghost story, not a haunted house.
Yeah, because it's like the spectre is the antagonist.
Yeah, it's the relationship between a person and a spectre, generally. Whereas haunted house is... If there is a character in a haunted house, it is more about them experiencing the sort of architecture and the way that the space is built out.
Yeah, because I mean, I guess we're thinking about some of the books that you've referenced, like obviously in Rebecca, Mandalay, the building, the building itself exists as a character. I know that's a really cliched thing to say, but, and you know, in Turn of the Screw...
It's almost as a character.
Oh God, I hate myself for saying that. But you know what I mean, right? Like, and you know, I could name lots of other ghost stories in which the house is very prominent. Like, is it Eel Manor in The Woman in Black, or like Bly Manor in Turn of the Screw? Whereas in your book, the house itself is the thing, right? Like, there isn't the hauntedness doesn't feel like it exists outside of the physical building. The physical building is the presence, if that makes sense.
But in a way, what I was trying to write there is that it's more the house intruding.
I definitely feel like, I apologize, but if I'm hogging the cues.
No, it's good, because I did my solo interview yesterday with Kala Henkor about other people's clothes, so it's nice to, you know, I'm here, I can contribute, but I'm happy to let you
lead the way. Okay, good. I don't want to be hogging Alison's attention, but I'm basking in it and I'm loving it. So let's talk about horror, because obviously we kind of touched upon the fact that actually the core of this book is also about fascism. It's about the kind of the rise of the right across the West and the kind of growing transphobia in the UK. And horror is obviously a brilliant vehicle for that kind of social commentary. How did you find actually writing it, though? Did you find it quite a stressful thing to do?
Yeah, in a way, because I mean, the novel, one of the things that grew out of it is that I was already sort of poking around on Mumsnet forum. So it was, I mean, and I knew I would have to, like, look again to get the way people talked, right? There are sections of the novel that take place on Mumsnet, and I wanted to get the language of the people posting on there correct. There are sections of the novel that take place at sort of meetings between people who would call themselves gender criticals. I mean, it's fairly near the beginning of the novel, but there is a character goes to a sort of meeting between gender criticals that's kind of based on a meeting that I protested. So in the crowd that's described in quite disparaging terms by the character that's going to the meeting, the crowd sort of protesting somewhere in that crowd.
Shit.
So it was distressing. I think the bits that are really, like, all-out horror were cathartic in a way, because those are the parts that are, they are literalizations of what it feels like. And that was cathartic to put that into a sort of more specific, horrific image. I don't recommend getting into that space, and I'm trying to not do that ever again, because it was, like,
yeah,
kind of hurt me a bit.
And also, it's done it now. Done that novel. Don't need to do that again. Yeah, I mean,
I, yeah, it would totally suck if I was writing something that was, like, grosser, surely.
But yeah, I guess, like, that's why, because obviously, you know, horror is a vehicle for social commentary. It always has been, right? But I guess it's impossible to write something like that without kind of going through some of the pain as well.
And I hope it's less painful for a reader than it was for me.
Oh.
I don't know if I'm doing a good job of by saying, like, this is horrible.
No, of course, but I mean, like, I guess I'm also, like, very aware of the fact that I'm coming at it as a cis reader. So, like, the moments that I found the most frightening are maybe not necessarily the moments that you had to put the most kind of pain into, if that makes sense. Whereas I'm sure that trans readers would probably read it quite differently. There is so much kind of meat in this book, right? Like, and it isn't something which is just relentlessly harrowing to read. There's also lots of, like, partying and, like, you know, sex and drugs and for all of the moments that are very dark, there is lightness that balances it out, in my opinion, anyway. So yeah, no, it's definitely, I mean, it's a really difficult balance to strike, and you smashed it. IMO.
I'm very glad you think so. Yeah, I think I like writing jokes. I think it would be weird to just write something without any kind of sort of humour in it, even if it's dark humour.
I mean, I feel like this is a good time to bring up what we will euphemistically refer to as the poster of the singer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, that's fairly near, for the listeners who have not yet read the novel, which is probably most of you, fairly near the opening of the novel, the character Alice is describing her room, and there is a poster on her wall of a 80s singer. I don't say who the singer is, but it's obvious enough to the reader who...
For legal reasons, it's very difficult to tell, and it's very obscured.
Yes.
but that singer, I mean, the sequence around the singer is... I definitely was thinking of as a joke, but then I've had people tell me that they found that legitimately frightening, because the poster, there's something not...
But that's the thing, yeah, like, it does work, it operates as both, like, it's kind of absurd and it feels satirical, but then also, it doesn't mean I'm not fucking thinking about it late at night, you know? Like, it achieves both of those things.
Are you looking at the posters of racist 80s singers?
Yes. Yeah, when I'm staring up at my redacted poster, which I still know. No, I think more just that, like, the idea of bedrooms as being our kind of our safe space. It's where we, you know, I'm a very anxious person. I get very frightened in my home. I read a lot of horror. I read a lot of true crime. But I always think, like, once you're in bed is when you're like, I'm safe now. I'm under the covers. Nothing can get me. And I think something about, like, the presence of a looming poster that's always there. She can't get rid of it. Although, you know, the poster has a story arc, which I won't spoil. But, like, there is this sense that she can't really do anything about it. And that's really horrible. Like, that's really unsettling. And it does make this, like, her haunting. It means it manifests in this specific thing. And there's this great line where she's like, she says something like, you know, it's manifested in this right now, but it's not really that. If I get rid of the poster, it will just come up elsewhere. And at least with the poster, I know where it is, which I thought was perfectly horrible.
I was really hoping that made sense, because that is how my brain works. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to make any sense to anyone else. Because it's such a...
It's like when there's a massive spider in the bathroom on the ceiling, and it's like, okay, I hate that, but at least I know, and if it's on the ceiling, I know it's on the ceiling. Whereas if I try and catch it and fuck it up, then I'm not going to know where it is. And that's worse.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it, actually. Yeah, I think I was watching the original Poltergeist. I went to see it in the cinema the other day, and it was amazing seeing that projected. But that's a film... There's a whole sequence where this little boy's in bed and he's looking at various things in his room and seeing something else in... When he looks at a tree outside of his window, you can see that he's seeing something wrong about that tree. That there's something you don't want to, like... If there's a stain on your wall that looks like a face, or if there's... Doing something about it makes it almost real.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, just... acknowledging it. Yeah, no, but it's like the... By not acknowledging it, you're almost giving it more power. So speaking of a child in bed terrified of the various items in his bedroom, I'm kind of interested in what your relationship with horror is. Like, did you grow up on horror? Did you read horror as a kid? Did you come to it as a teenager? Like, what's your vibe?
I didn't really read much horror or watch much horror at all until I was in my teens. Like, the only horror I remember reading as a kid was Goosebumps.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But,
so are you a Stephen King fan?
I've yet to read any that I've actually adored, I guess. There are novels that I find... I find The Shining interesting, but I don't think I love The Shining. There's too much in it that I think is, like, objectionable or just, like, weird.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Weird in a way that I don't enjoy. But, so... I think I'm one of those annoying people where, like, I really like certain adaptations of him, but I'm not Sure.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, yeah.
That being said, I've had readers tell me that they think that there is a sort of Stephen King-esque quality the way I write certain things, and, you know, that's...
Yeah, that's interesting.
If that's true, then it's... I have a lot of friends who like Steve, and you know, that I get it, but I don't quite... relate. Maybe there's a high chance that I will read a Stephen King book at some point and go like, oh
yeah, I feel like the moment for me was Misery,
which I did buy a cheap Misery.
I feel like that's the first one that I've read. I really enjoyed Carrie as a younger reader, but Misery I think was the first one that I read and was just like, this is just straight up gripping. I'm gripped. There's not too much backstory, there's not any like weird stuff that makes me feel uncomfortable. It's not like... Actually, it's. I always forget that it is actually quite fatphobic when I'm just like, I'm just so...
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the film, I think, probably irons that out quite a lot.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Just by virtue of having, like... I mean, it could... That film would be unwatchable if they'd gotten someone in, like, a fat suit, which... I'm sure they considered, knowing how
and
it is.
It's interesting, because obviously then, it because they didn't make that choice, it launched the career of a very beloved plus-size actress.
Yeah, that's true. It well happened that I read, I don't know, Salem's Lot or any number of his books, and or I read The Dark Tower and go like, oh no, I kind of get it. I get what it is about him that he works. But for now, I think stick to just watching Mike Flanagan's adaptation of Doctor
Sleep. Completely reasonable. I was just going to ask you, like, have you thought about your like dream casting if Tell Me I'm Worthless was going to be adapted? But then I was like, some of this, I do not know how they would film.
There's not a huge amount of trans actors in Hollywood. I mean, I'd love for a, I don't know, if there are any trans filmmakers out there.
That'd be banging.
rights are available.
Just postcards to Cypher. Get your offers in.
Oh, no. Postcards to what page are you on, so we can broker the deal and get our 20% or whatever we're going to get.
I was very aware when writing it that there were things to do with British fascism that I knew if I didn't talk about it would be irresponsible, but... that I did not have, like, I don't have direct experience of racism or anti-Semitism, but I knew that if I didn't work, because it wouldn't have anything really to say about fashion. So, I mean, that's one of the things that I'm interested to see what people think about, and I hope that people think that I did a good job there.
Oh, it's all happening in your flat, man. It's all going on. Has the karaoke finished now?
Yeah, I think the karaoke's finished and they moved on to hammering.
As one does,
But yeah, I'm sort of interested, that's one of the aspects, is I'm interested to see what people think about, sort of, says or talks about in relation to wider fashion. Because I know what I'm saying, I definitely know what I'm saying about trans stuff, but, because that's the stuff I have experience about, but I hope that I got it right in the other subject matters that
Book two is coming. How are you doing with that? Are you currently writing it? Have you sold it already? What's the story?
I mean, I should say that's novel two, not book two.
Interesting. But Alison Rumfitt, you sly dog.
I haven't sold Brainworms yet necessarily. It's a different sort of mode of horror. It's about it's about a trans woman in the UK, but it's sort of talking about body horror. There are things where I'm like, I'm going to try and outdo myself here, as well as also in terms of like the thematic stuff. And make it sort of a bigger novel on that side of it as well as trying to write sequences of horror that are like.
Well, I am excited. I'm scared. I'm excited. I will obviously be reading it, but maybe, but maybe not over lunch.
So, Tell Me I'm Worthless by you, Alison Rumfitt, is out now, as of yesterday, from Cypher.
It is out now. Yes.
So you should march into your local bookshop and say, "One copy of Tell Me I'm Worthless by Alison Rumfitt, please." Should they not?
They should.
Well. Thank you so much for joining us, Alison. I so enjoyed, you know, listening and randomly interjecting into this chat. And thank you so much once again.
Yeah, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been a joy.
See you next time.
Bye.